Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, September 1, 2011. Did you ever think you'd live through another year of Obama? But look, I don't want to do politics right now. It's Labor Day weekend. Most normal people are thinking about what they're going to be doing this weekend. They don't really care about the debate and next Tuesday and the NFL and the Obama blinked or the Republicans blinked. I can't even follow it personally, nor do I care. It's just too far ahead for me to care about it. I've got a big announcement to make, though, I'll tell you that. Do you know who is going to precede me on WOR in New York starting next week? Former Governor Patterson from New York is going to precede me on WOR, which is very interesting. And he's actually going to join me tomorrow on these airwaves to talk about his new show. Now you say, well, wait a minute, Savage, come on now. Wasn't he a Democrat? Yeah, but did you ever hear me bash Patterson? Almost never. Why? He was actually more, let us say, centrist than Bloomberg is in New York. So, I mean, the Patterson family goes way back in New York. Basil Patterson, I remember an awful lot of the family history in New York, so it'll be fun to have him on the show tomorrow. You know what I want to do today? I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you some titles, and I want you to answer the question. Would you rather I talk about the Keystone pipeline that runs from Canada to Mexico, or Obama, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants, the fly and the tuna, Symphony Sid story, tough high school geometry teacher with two fingers on his right hand, happy and sad cufflinks, woodchuck Bill, Fat Pat and Tippy the dog, Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck, dead man's pants, Sam the butcher, nutty friend who had a crazy mother, Coney Island wax figures, half man, half woman in Long Beach, the chestnut man, one-armed Frank, Louie and his crazed monkey, the nympho in Alley Pond Park, loved by the sewer plant, Fat Al's tuna, my silent brother, my first autopsy, my first dead body, my first mortgage, killing mice in a laboratory. Which would you rather I do? Would you rather I read or actually tell you some of these childhood stories, including new ones, that actually some of them came, a new one came to me in the middle of the night last night on the Savage Mind. The Savage Receiver Mind was on at 3 in the morning. You know what came to my mind? I was telling you a story yesterday on this show. Remember I said my friend's father was the toughest guy in the crowd, and boys tend to gravitate towards the toughest man in the circle because the tough men are usually the tribal leaders, which is always true. It's always been true, always will be true. Now, tough can mean tough of mind, tough of body. This guy was tough of body and tough of mind, so he led the boys, and I told you that. He was an Upper East Side bar owner when the other guys were petty merchants or had small menial jobs. You know, we were all immigrant families. Somehow he worked his way into opening a slick bar on the Upper East Side, and he was, you know, he wore suits. The other guys wore overalls or blue shirts. He wore a white shirt. But nevertheless, they were all in the same social milieu. He never put his nose up in the air. So I was thinking about him last night as I went to sleep, and you know what came to my mind was this. I remember once my friend's mom, who was married to this tough guy, took us to his bar. I don't know where she took us, the Ringling Brothers or whatever. And then in the middle of a sunny day, we went into this dark wood paneled bar in the Upper East Side, and nobody was in there. It was almost like out of a Godfather scene, except the owner, who was this guy, and the bartender, who looked remarkably like the bartender who chokes Fat Clement, not Fat, the other one to death in the Garden. It was like a, and we ate dinner in the place. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, it was remembrances of steaks past. When I ate that steak in that bar that he made for me and the other kid, his son, I finally ate steak. I had no idea that the steak I'd been eating in my house, it was like eating a catcher's mitt. I thought steak was supposed to be something you struggled with. I thought steak was something you had to attack like with a saw. This is not an aspersion upon my family, but I mean, we didn't have a lot of money, so I guess we got a cheaper cut of meat, or these guys knew how to tenderize it. But I remember cutting into that steak as long as I live and how tasty and soft it was. I said, I didn't even know this was what steak was supposed to taste like. So it reminded me of the old Buddy Hackett joke, another one, long dead. Who remembers him, right? You remember Buddy Hackett, old Catskill Mountains comedian, but one of the best. He got up once in front of an audience and he said, I never forget when I went to the Army to Fort Dix. He said, all my life, he said, I suffered from indigestion from my mother's food. He said, I ate the Army food and I didn't have indigestion. He said, I went to the doctor. I said, doctor, something's wrong with me. He said, why? He says, I have no gas, no indigestion. I don't feel like puking. What's wrong with me? In other words, he had never eaten a meal before that didn't get him sick. I thought it was funny, but it related to that in a sense of the steak. So, okay, you have the choice. It's your show on the Savage Nation. You want me to do the Keystone Pipeline? You want me to speculate on whether Hillary Clinton will run in the primaries against Obama? You want me to talk about Muslims and the headscarves at the Rye Playland? You want me to talk about Maxine Waters? I don't want to talk about it. I'll take your calls instead on the Savage Nation. Let's start with Arizona, Brent. Brent, thanks for calling me. What city are you in Arizona, Brent?
I'm in a little bit south of Tucson in the town of Green Valley.
Is there a town called Threeson, or is they're not numbered down there?
There's a Three Points.
You see? So what'd you call about, Brent?
The electric saddle stitch pants from your book.
Did you ever hear this story? I mean, did I ever?
Years ago when the book first came out, and I fell over laughing hearing it.
Okay, it's a true story, and I'm actually going to read the electric blue saddle stitched pants. In the seventh grade, my mother bought me the most beautiful, incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted these pants really bad. It was the Elvis era, right? Mama Savage saved, and she bought me a pair of electric blue saddle-stitched pants. Well, I wore them to school. I thought I was Elvis himself. Well, on the very first day, a bigger, older kid just happened to be wearing the same exact pants, and naturally we got into a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world because these were the most expensive, beautiful pants I had ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. How am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my father? How am I going to tell my mother? So I come home with the pants, hiding the rip under my coat. I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. But she didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about it. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, 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 don't worry about it. So all night long, I couldn't sleep. The next day, the women were talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens. And they were moving the crumbs around with their bread knives and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back. Don't worry, Michael. The pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what the pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was then. We throw everything away. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good, and it was. The pants were weaved. That's what a mother's for, I guess, to fix everything but a broken heart. And that's from an earlier book of mine, Psychological Nudity. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, I'll go back to the stories of years past because they're good. They're classic stories, and I think people like them, whatever their political orientation is. I have family right now. They're in the south of France on a boat. And I'm getting, like, emails and pictures every day. And they say to me, California in particular is a third world country compared to Europe. The roads are not broken. The streets are not dirty. There's no homeless bums in the streets. They said America has become a third world country compared to Europe. And, moreover, San Francisco is more of a third world city than Malaysia is, than you find in Malaysia. You cannot believe what's going on here. Because of the corrupt Democrats that run this state and the amount of money spent on social services and stolen and just plain out stolen. Here's another example of the stupidity of the city of San Francisco, perhaps the most beautiful city on earth. We have the America's Cup coming here, right? Now the agency that controls the waterfront says, we're not going to let you park super yachts on the San Francisco waterfront in 2013 to watch the races because it will impact the public's ability to enjoy the bay. In other words, the homeless bums who walk by that area won't be able to defecate in the park. I never saw anything like this. They're liable to screw up the America's Cup race because of their idiocy. But I don't want to get into this today. I want to take your calls. Let's go to New York City on WOR. Time is short. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. You've been saying for such a long time that liberalism is a mental disorder, and I wanted to give you an example that I heard that really reminded me of that. I heard on another station, a progressive, saying that we should devote as much attention to Christian fanaticism and Christian radicalism as far as terror attacks go as we would to Islamic terrorism.
Yeah, that's the latest thing. That's coming from the Muslim fanatics who are in the Homeland Security Department. That's the official line of the federal family under Big Sis. She figured out that if you can bash Christians, you can curry favor with the Muslims. You know what I mean? And there's an awful lot of Muslims voting for Obama these days because his middle name ain't Christ. His middle name is Muhammad. See, I mean, his middle name ain't Muhammad Noor. I mean, his middle name, as you well know, is Hussein. And so, therefore, you got to understand where the numbers are. You're asking me another question, which is what causes liberalism, the mental disorder? Isn't that your real question?
I mean, essentially, when I heard this...
Well, what causes liberalism is the desire to be loved. Liberals generally want to be loved by everybody. They don't want anyone to dislike them.
I want to be loved by you, just you. Nobody else but you.
And it is. And by the way, most liberals are nice people. Most of them are very nice people. They don't bother anybody. They want to be left alone. And they figure that if they stay out of your life, you'll like them and they'll, you know, basically they're good. And their idea of a conservative is a Nazi. They think that most Republicans secretly have SA or SS uniforms and a picture of Hitler in their living room. And this, of course, is an example of the insanity of liberalism in its extremes, just as there are extremes on the conservative side, as exemplified by, I don't know who. Really, I don't even know of any extremists anymore. I think they've all left the right side. They're all leftists today. But nevertheless, the fact is that liberals have this horrible prejudice against any Republican, assuming, look at it this way, most liberals think of them, try to visualize what a liberal is. In the form of a woman, it would be Larry David. In the form of a man, it would be Larry David. In the form of a woman, it would be Larry David and drag. That would be a woman liberal who at every turn, every chance he gets, he bashes Christians, the cross, or Christianity, and assumes that any Republican is a Nazi. This is a product of growing up, in my opinion, in a kind of a labor front home in New York City as a child, oil cloth on the floor. The father worked in the ILGWU, even though he was a man. He was in the needle trades one way or the other. And hated the owners and thought that one day there would be a workers' revolution and the workers would run the country. Well, take a look at every country where the workers have taken over and you'll see what happens when workers take over. I don't want to go down that road. So that's it. Basically, liberals are nice people, but they're mentally deranged at a certain point. Now let's go back to unregular programming. New York, Marie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I'm always impressed the way you totally recall your childhood as if it was yesterday, you know, places, people, names, everything that happened. And I was just wondering what you attribute that to.
You mean why have I not lost my memory despite the fact that I'm a man of over 50?
Not really, because my memory...
I have a perfect memory for a couple of reasons, because I exercise my mind every day. My mind is extremely active. I mean, this whole idea that you have to start forgetting things is ludicrous. If you keep your mind super active, you're never going to have memory loss. I mean, never. You generally won't have memory loss if you use your mind the way you use muscles. I mean, people work out in gyms and have beautiful bodies, but their minds atrophy because they're not using their minds.
And what do you do to keep your mind active?
Fantasize as much as I can. Well, no, come on. I'm preparing for the show. I'm writing books. I'm broadcasting. Look, when I'm on the air, my mind is moving rapidly, isn't it, Marie?
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. So I have to be sharp, and I have to be able to remember things, and I have to be able to recall events and historical facts and details in order to do a show, or else I wouldn't last very long. But, I mean, look, the take-home message on this, Marie, is that memory is in many ways a function of exercising your mind. There's an idea that your mind should become, you should suffer memory loss as you get older. It's not necessarily true. And that's an important thing to remember. I'm going to give you an example. In China, up until the 80s and 90s, you know the people usually go to after work classes run by the government? I mean by the Chinese family, not by the Chinese communist government. Let's call it the Chinese communist family has classes, after hours classes for the elderly. Whatever it is, painting, dancing, reading, writing, poetry. And the elderly in China generally go to classes. They don't sit around like dumb idiots watching the Kardashians make fools of themselves or watching freaks on a dance show. They understand that that's for mindless people. Las Vegas, Louis, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Listen, I belong to a club, and we got three guys who are real liberal. And they, when we ask them, why do you do it? I mean, and they said exactly what you said, but they said a little different. They said, do you know how good it feels when these people look at you and they love you because you did something for them that they can't do for themselves?
Yeah, you go. So in other words, a white liberal wants to be loved by minorities in particular. Make no mistake about it. Have you ever watched a white liberal approach a person of color, whether it be in a restaurant or in a workplace, how they try to relate to them as though they're one of their brothers? Have you ever seen that embarrassment?
Oh, I worked a gambling
restaurant. It's unbelievable, because if I were a person of color, my flesh would crawl. I mean, that way they try to make a certain contact, like, how you doing, man? They talk in a slang that isn't even used by the person they're talking to. They immediately assume a person of color is a jazz musician from the 1940s.
The Jews in the day.
No, I've seen that. I couldn't believe it. It happened the other day. Where was I? I forget exactly. You talk about memory. I do forget where this happened. I was stunned. It was a guy, an ordinary guy. He was a person of color. I don't remember whether he was Hispanic or he was African-American. But a white lib went up to him over something. I was there. I don't know. It was like a restaurant. And right away, the liberal tried to, like, hey, how you doing, man? Like, with the head shake. Like, he was on the inside, and he wanted the guy to love him and know that he wasn't like the rest of the white people. I think the black guy looked at him like he was crazy. You know what I'm saying? The 60s are over. H. Rap Brown ain't rapping anymore. You know what I'm saying? H. Rap Brown, stop rapping, Johnson.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and the jobs report's coming out tomorrow, which is, it's all political, it's nonsense jobs report. What can a government do about jobs other than make them up, make up jobs? I mean, how can they make up jobs? You want to stimulate an economy? Make it easier for business owners. Cut taxes. You don't understand this. You see, many people who are not business owners or business-oriented. You see, I was once a kid and poor, and I didn't understand any of this. So I assumed that the businessman automatically was a thief, and he robbed everybody, because that's how I was brainwashed as a child in the communist Queens College. It may as well have been called Communist College rather than Queens College, because it was filled mainly with emigres who had fled Europe and came here and poisoned the children of Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, with the City College system, which was infested with communists at the time, as is well established by the Venona papers. But let's put that aside. So I didn't understand how this really worked. The way it really works is this. If you're a business owner and you're strapped with red tape, and you're strapped with city inspectors that come and bother you every 2 minutes, and you're strapped with high taxes, you don't have the money or the inclination to open up another business. So therefore, you're not going to create jobs. If you eliminate the city inspectors who bother you, if you eliminate the red tape or reduce it, you lower the taxes, then the extra money that the businessman owns, he will usually put into expanding his business by opening another store on that level, expanding his product line on that level. And that creates jobs. But you cannot explain that to the federal family. Because if you inspect the federal family under Barack Hussein Obama, who's the big daddy of the federal family, and I guess you'd have to say that Big Sis Napolitano would be the mommy of the family, because she's the mommy figure. They don't understand it because they've never held a job. They've held government positions, which is much different than holding a job. You understand this now? Did I explain it to you? Okay, good. I'm glad I did. New York, WOR, Andrea, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I have to tell you, last night's show was phenomenal. It was outstanding.
The talk of the Jerry Lewis tooth, I am telling you, I was dying of hysteria.
No, it is. I had a few friends who emailed me. They said they were screaming. They were, one of them was working a job site with immigrant workers. They were screaming with laughter at the show. And it was one of those shows where I didn't even know where it came from.
You know, my husband was at work, and I said, oh, my God, I couldn't get up out of the chair. I said, I hope he's listening. And then when he came home last night, he says, did you listen to Savage? I said, of course I did. And that's another thing. You said that women don't listen to your show. Let me tell you, I listen to you every night. I wish WOR would have you on for
Jerry Lewis tooth was very funny, but, you know, it was a shock. It was supposed to be the final installation. And when I heard the dentist say to the assistant that I was doped up, he said, uh-oh, it's rotated. I didn't know what it meant, but he gave me the mirror. It really looked like Jerry Lewis in The Freak.
It was
frightening. They made it wrong in the laboratory, in other words. It stuck, got jutted out. Jutted out. I'll tell you a follow-up, okay? It's not funny, but I went to a better dentist today. I went from a regular dentist to a top guy. And the top guy looked at it and he said, all right, give him one more chance. He didn't do anything wrong. The laboratory made it wrong. So they'll make it right this time. What do I know? My only prayer is that the implanted bone is not from an alcoholic transvestite. But I will tell you this. I do have inclinations to drink more recently, and my voice is changing. I don't know. We don't know if there was any active DNA in the transplant. At least I could have picked the bone if I had known. 1-800-449-8255. Dover. Where's Dover? Dover, Maryland? Dover. Is that Dover? Dover, Delaware. Dover Soul. Dover, Vita, welcome from Dover, Delaware. How are you?
Dover, Delaware. I'm wonderful, and I'm so excited because I'd love to hear your Symphony Fizz story.
How are you listening to me in Dover, Delaware? On which station?
WDOV.
WDOB. WDOB. So you heard the Symphony Sid story years ago?
Oh, I grew up in, well, my teenage years were spent listening to Symphony Sid at night.
Okay, so it's a one-pager, but guys, set it up with the song, Jumping With My Boy Sid in the City, and Jumping With My Boy Mike in the Nation, Jumping With My Boy. Now, that Silver Cup Bread Factory is now a movie studio. I think Robert De Niro was involved in it. I don't know. But My Boy Mike in the Nation, Jumping With My Boy Mike in the Nation, and My Boy Mike in the Nation. So here's a portion from one of my shows from an old day, and we had a lot of American jazz in New York City when I was young. Would you be coming home at 2 or 3 in the morning from a Latin club, whenever there was a Symphony Sid on there, he would be with his gravelly smoker's scotchy voice, and you were on the way home and you knew the world was right. That's probably because you were stoned, but tell me, who plays a saxophone like that today? Nobody. And he had a laugh on him on the radio. When this guy laughed, the world was okay. I don't care how bad your day was. I'm very lucky that I grew up in the age of radio. I don't know if you know this. I don't want to talk about nostalgia. But I did grow up in the age of radio. There was someone who wrote an article recently who said that some of the great people in radio today grew up in the age of radio. I happen to have grown up at my father's knee listening to the radio. To this day, I can still smell a secondhand smoke I got from Dad's Philip Morris. If what is true about secondhand smoke, which of course it isn't, I should have been dead at 11. I can still see his yellow nicotine-stained fingers and me dozing next to him, listening to the Green Hornet. You had to use your mind listening to the radio plays back in those days. Today it's all spoon-fed. You don't have to use your imagination anymore. So it's left to guys in the radio business to say it like it is. When I play Symphony Sid on my show, here's the memory chip. Silver Cup Bread Factory, over the 59th Street Bridge, 3 o'clock in the morning, coming home from the Latin dance clubs, smoke coming out of the Silver Cup Bakery mouth, going down the Long Island Expressway, another 8 minutes to home. It was cold out. It was late. Got to be at school or work the next day. That's it. That's the whole piece. Play Symphony Sid, guys, and then we'll go on to some, politics, news, whatever you want. Fox News poll, despite rebel gains, most oppose U.S. military in Libya. What would you rather hear, Symphony Sid or most opposed U.S. military in Libya? Guys, play Symphony Sid. I'm dying here already. It's like a cue, you know? That means play it. Arnie, are you listening to the show? Because I'm going to do a story now about the midget in the Florida hotel. I had an old friend, Arnie C. from New York, who listens occasionally on WR. Will you hold the line open for Arnie? Oh, he can't hear me. Okay, right. Did I ever tell you about the midget in the Florida hotel who robbed me? You know, I look back on my life. I didn't know I had a rich life. I had no idea my life was rich. You know, Fat Al's Tuna, Louie and his crazy monkey, one-armed Frank, the chestnut man, half-woman, the Long Beach Colony Island wax figures, nutty friend had crazy mother. I didn't know I had a rich life. I had no idea. Kids don't know. There's no perspective when you're young. I was like an ordinary kid. I didn't know how wealthy and rich I was in terms of experiences, you know? And I'm sure that kids today do have rich lives. I don't know if they know how to look for the richness in their life. That's the point. Or, I don't know, maybe those characters are no longer around. I mean, where are you going to find a man with one breast today and a half a mustache in a freak show? They don't even call it a freak show anymore. I think they call it the Federal Family. I think that anybody who would be in Ringling Brothers in the so-called freak show in those days would be working today in the HHS or in DHS or LSMFT. They'd be working for the federal family, investigating hormones and steroids and foods. Or they'd be breaking into the Gibson guitar factory to see if anybody was using endangered wood. That's what they'd be doing. Imagine midgets with 40 caliber Glocks on their hips breaking into a guitar factory. Put them up! Put them up! We want to see if the wood's endangered! This is what they did. This is the government under Obama. Boy, people can't wait till he's gone. Wow. Whoa. Do we have a soundbite of Symphony Sid's voice himself, by the way? Remember, he was good. I heard he drank on this. Someone called me once. They said he was a real... That's why his voice was so deep. People assume that I smoke. I don't smoke. People assume I drink on the air. I do not drink on the air. I've never had a drink on the air. Maybe once. I tried it about 3 months ago at 5 to the end of a show. I was in Florida. I wanted to see what it would be like. It was awful. You cannot think when you drink. You know, it's an interesting test. It'll tell you, like, don't drink when you drive and you think you can. It does impair you. And, you know, the way to test it is try to do a radio show and have one drink and see what happens to you. Then you'll have an idea of what it does when you're driving a car or driving a boat. You're not allowed to drink when you drive a boat either, by the way, for good reason, because people get like Mr. Idiot. You go down to Florida, look at the Guidos on the intracoastal there with the three engines giving everyone a swamp job. They all think that they're in Jersey Shore. Every schmendrick wants to pretend that they're on a movie star. All right, look, that's the human condition. I say send them to Libya. Las Vegas, Jerry, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. I am so much older than you, but you've taken me back with so many of your stories. I remember very well listening to and watching the radio. I didn't know as a poor American of African descent how rich I was by looking at the radio. I learned classical music, William Tell's Overture, Flight of the Bumblebee. I didn't know I was learning that stuff by watching the radio.
What? No, it's interesting you're using that word on purpose when you say watching the radio. I hear what you just said. Because you are watching the radio in the sense that words are images. Isn't that what you mean?
Exactly. And I had all of the images. I mean, I was listening to soap operas, and I had the images. As I said, I'm from the ghettos of Chicago. But I've been everywhere just by watching the radio as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how would you define yourself politically, Jerry? I would assume with your background you'd be a Democrat. Isn't that true?
Well, no, I'm not. And I've got to say this. All black people are not Democrats. I am a staunch conservative, as a matter of fact.
How did that happen? Well, okay, let me get into that then. How did you define yourself as such?
Well, I think it's because of my work experiences over the years. I have a limited formal education, and I've gone from the dregs of society. I've managed millions of dollars of businesses over the years, and I've watched people. You know, you talk about people on unemployment. I was unemployed with a wife and a child, and I was too embarrassed to go and collect an unemployment check. I never did.
So what did you do?
I found a job.
You went out and found a job, and that's how you built yourself back up.
It didn't matter what the job was. I wasn't looking for a title. And there were times, Michael, when I'd take a job for less money because I saw the job that I was taking was further down the road going to be better for me and my family.
Unbelievable. Well, that's the whole story in a nutshell. You know, people would say, though, that was a different time. There were a lot of jobs. You can't find one today. I don't know if that's true or not. I personally think you could find a job if you're looking for it somewhere.
About this, Michael, in a book that I've written that's available on Amazon, it talked about how, as an African-American with very limited education, I have had so many successes.
What's the name of your book? Go ahead, plug it. I don't care. It's not going to hurt me. What's it called?
F as in Frank. Fact or fiction, you decide.
Beautiful. What's your last name?
Blackwell.
Mr. Blackwell, I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power, my new novel, and hopefully you will enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed conversing with you. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let us go to the next caller somewhere in America. And whatever you want to talk about, politics or the stories, I'll do either or on the Savage Nation. Sacramento, KSTE Country. Lance, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you want to hear?
Yes, Dr. Savage, The Leatherman, I think, is one of your more profound episodes in psychological nudity. I think it tells a very important story. Your father is involved.
You know, actually, it's interesting because today that story would have more meaning than when I first told it. When I first told that story, we were in the go-go years in America. The economy was booming. People were flipping houses. There was very low unemployment. But today it's the opposite, and I would think that they would want to hear the Leather Man of a man who had everything and lost it all and what happened to him. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Quite right. I think you could postulate what would happen to the Leather Man if he applied for stimulus.
I would imagine we will hear from the Leather Man the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man, first a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days, is like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days by their success, you know, their status, cars and houses. I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard, a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall-to-wall, and it was pink. And he was a big cigar smoker. And we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father. And we'd leave. My father never said anything against him. But, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing, collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees. Thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was sitting in my father's house. And I loved this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. You know, we all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father. Man, he's sitting there shrunken up in the chair in my living room where he had lost everything. And he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar, and he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. And lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later, he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits.
Savage.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a true story, and I don't know what the moral of the story is, but it did happen to that poor man. And what would happen to a man today if he lost everything? Would he be the same? Would he wish that God killed him rather than he see him lose? I don't know. You see people hanging themselves if they lose money. Look what went on with some of these TV shows with these idiots. They didn't want anyone to see that they were actually broke. So I don't think things really change. I'll be right back for more on the Savage Nation. News, views, and reviews.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm not going to use the bully pulpit of the Savage Nation because I don't have one. Basically, talk radio is not a bully pulpit. The White House has the bully pulpit. And as you well know, we have a bully in the pulpit. But here on talk radio, it's something else. It's an opinion pulpit that we have. And, I could talk about the news, Obama moving his speech, dispute with the Republicans. I could hardly follow it. It was another, contest of sorts. And Obama blinked. He moved his speech amid a dispute. There's nothing more to be said about it. We could talk about the economy, but what good is talking going to do? It's like talking to yourself. You have a Marxist economy run by Marxists, lifetime academic Marxists who don't even understand how business works. Instead, they invade the Gibson guitar factory with drawn guns looking for endangered species wood inside a guitar factory. This is Obama, the Obama administration to a T. If you ask me to epitomize everything wrong with the Obama administration, it would be this one act of sending armed thugs from the Department of Fish and Game into the Gibson guitar factory with loaded guns and treating guitar makers as though they are criminals. That is the Obama administration to a T. Goldman takes a dark view. Private note to hedge fund clients gives a strategist view. And basically, the hedge fund clients to Goldman Sachs have been told, hey, it's a gloomy economic outlook, and watch out. They said that this is a 54-page report sent to hundreds of Goldman's institutional clients that basically argued that as much as $1 trillion in capital may be needed to shore up European banks. That small businesses in the United States, a past driver of job production, are basically languishing. And that China's growth is not sustainable. How's that for a dark view of the future? Now, where is this $1 trillion in capital going to come from to shore up European banks? It's going to come from Geithner? That's why I'd rather talk about psychological nudity and Savage Radio stories or my new novel, Abuse of Power. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want me to do news, views, and reviews? I'll do it. Let's start in Florida. Irving, welcome to the Savage Nation. Where are you calling from in Florida, Irving?
Beach, Michael, but originally...
Wait, hold on, I'm sorry, which beach?
Et cetera. But anyway, I love you.
Wait, I didn't hear... I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Which beach?
Is Symphony Sid.
Wait,
I knew...
What beach?
Boston,
Irving, sorry.
We
Irving, stop.
I
what
knew
beach,
Symphony Sid.
Stop. What beach are you living at in Florida? What area?
Boynton Beach.
Okay, good. Now I heard you. I know Boynton Beach. I know the Boynton Beach Inlet. I know people got swept off the jetty because they were so intelligent they sat there during a hurricane.
No, they just observed. But anyway, when they kicked Symphony Sid out of New York, he landed in Boston.
And why did they kick him out of New York?
Well, he was going with a black girl.
That was a scandal in those days? That drove him out of radio?
That's what they said, that was the reason. And the
oh, my God, how times have changed for the better. That's horrible. Yeah. So he goes to Boston, and what happened then?
In the store where I worked, his last name was the same as my mother's hometown in Austria. And his parents came from there also.
Well, what was Symphony Sid's real name?
Tarnopol.
His name was Sid Tarnopol?
Correct.
No wonder he changed the Symphony Sid.
No, he was a terrific guy.
But he had a great voice, didn't he? I'm talking about great voices in radio. He had one of the great voices in radio. Irving, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power so you can make your friends jealous in Boynton Beach. Stay on the line. Guys, we found something funny for you in radio. Look, it's the end of August already, beginning of September. Pardon me, September 1, can you believe it? Most normal people are in the south of France. Or in Italy, the Catskill Mountains. I don't know where they are, but they're not listening to radio right now. If you're listening to radio, you're one of the rare few. And so I figure let's do something interesting today instead of getting crazy about politics again. We've got plenty of time for that next week when Congress comes back from their vacations. I'll work in politics in this hour. But we found a sound cut of Symphony Sid. I want you to listen to this guy's voice, how good it is. Listen.
I've been singing the hot weather blues these days. Face powder cake or disappear, no shiny. Well, that's a fine how do you do. After all, I've been telling you about Snow White face powder.
I love it. Snow White face powder. I mean, this guy was ahead of his time. I don't know whether he was advertising a product or talking about what kept him going on the radio. But, I mean, Snow White powder is very popular in Hollywood to this day. Never mind in those days. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Michigan Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Dr. Savage?
Good, good, good.
Yes, I've been listening. We just got you up here in the UP of Michigan on a new channel that came out of Manistique, Michigan. And I'm in the UP, and we hunt, and we fish, and we survive up here. We take care of our own. I just got my food insurance, two packs of food insurance essence.
Oh, yeah, that's a great advertiser. That stuff, I got about 25, 50 boxes of it in my house.
You're the man. You're the man, because my wife and I are survivalists, and we're ready for anything that comes down the pike. This government's totally out of control. And
well, you imagine raiding a guitar factory with loaded guns looking for endangered species wood?
I have my AR and 2,000 rounds of ammo, and I'm ready.
There you go. You're all set. But so what did you call about?
I called about your new book.
Which?
The new one about Abuse of Power.
All right. I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Send the man a free copy of Abuse of Power up to the boondocks up there. He can share it with his wife and the ammunition. He can read it on an ammo crate. 1-800-449-8255. Michael is Savage. I couldn't hear him. That's all. I wasn't being a... Tampa, Florida. RC, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I want to say you're just a great role model for someone who's reinvented themselves over time and always staying active and with being able to write a book and have a radio show and do everything. I just want to say, as a listener who enjoys your show every night, I admire you. And I wanted to ask, as someone younger, what do you think is the secret for staying so productive and staying so creative?
Desperation, anxiety. Desperation and anxiety are the greatest motivators on the planet. I'm not kidding you. You have to, you know what they used to say? I'm not kidding you. You have to want it to get it. That's number one. Nothing's coming to you. Everything I ever got in my life, I had to fight for. That's number one. Nothing has ever been given to me. In fact, impediments have stood in my way every step of the way, and they still do. Every step of the way in my life, there have been impediments. There have been people blocking me. And every step, I have had to overcome adversity to get what I want. And so you have to have the desire for something in order to get it. That's true whether it's a girlfriend or a job or a victory of some kind, RC. Haven't you found that to be true in your life?
I have. And one of the great stories I've always remembered is with your son, when you said you chased him down the street, but then that's when he went out and made the tapes for the radio show and got your syndication. I always
My God, I remember that. I was down and out. You talk about the Leatherman. Yeah, things were not good for me. I was living in a rental house at the time, and I was 50 years old, and I had come to an end of a certain career of mine. All my careers had come to an end. No matter what I tried went bad. And I never forget, as long as I lived, I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up. My son was very young at the time. I don't even remember the year it was. He was old enough to know. I mean, he was 18, 20. And I said to him, I was sitting in the back of this horrible house. I just didn't like it. And I said, I don't want to work anymore. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the struggle. And he said to me, you can't quit. You're too young. And I chased him. I ran after him down the street. He wasn't afraid of me. He was laughing at me. But he motivated me to get up off my behind, basically. And I realized what I was doing. And I came back and realized I couldn't give up. I mean, I had to be a role model for him. That you remember that story. That's true.
It's very inspiring. It is a great role model. You're a great role model for people as they get older. They can, their best years can always be ahead of them. So I want to say thank you for all you
do. Well, you can't quit. You cannot quit. God's going to make us quit anyway, RC. I mean, God lets us know when it's time to quit. He just ends it for us. You understand how it works? I mean, either you fall through a skylight or you just stop breathing. That's all. That's the end of it. And then you stop working. What is the point of giving up before then? Why? What are you going to do? I don't understand people who retire. I myself can never understand retirement. I don't get it. I don't know what a man would do with himself. I'm not a golfer. I'm not a tennis player. Maybe if I had grown up doing those things, I would look forward to it. But I can't imagine a more empty life than getting up to look forward to a golf game.
I agree 100%.
In other words, you say to you, how do you keep your mind active? Look what's going on in the world around us, RC. When you have a loser like you, I mean, when you have an administration like this, that is so out of touch with reality, so inept, so anti-business, so anti-family, so anti-American, so anti-military, so anti-police, so anti-family. How could you not want to get up in the morning and see what they're going to do next?
It is an amazing time. Who would have thought the anti-war president would start a third war in the Middle East?
There you go. Who would have thought that an anti-war president would set the Arab world on fire?
It's amazing times, and like it's... Like
yeah, and that's right. As the Greeks said, it's good to live in interesting times. RC, today is a good day for you because I am sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power, my forthcoming novel. It'll be out in just 12 days. I can't watch 12 days. What about yesterday? Yeah, 13, 12 days. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Amazing what's going on. Delaware John, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, Mike. I just wanted to add something to the whole Gibson story. I don't know if you're already aware of it or not, but I was listening to my local University of Delaware radio, and there's a talk show host on. He noted that Gibson is the only guitar manufacturer in the country that is located in a right-to-work state.
Oh.
So, yeah,
you think Obama targeted the Gibson guitar factory because they were not unionized? Is that it?
It's likely because given was in 2009, another manufacturing musical instrument manufacturing company called Peavey. They were given a bunch of grief for doing the same thing.
Oh, so then maybe if Obama can unionize the Gibson guitar factory, they can make guitars nobody will buy, like his Green Jobs Corporation in California that went bankrupt. This is an example, again, of this is an example of an egghead government, an egghead administration. They don't know the first thing about business. All they know how to do is force people out of business. I didn't know that. So there it is. That's the reason they bothered Gibson, because they were not unionized. Sure, maybe they could force them to hire illegal aliens so they make guitars that don't play. That would be good. That's terrific. I'll be right back.
Savage.
God, this just came out. Remember I talked about De La Hoya yesterday with the suicide? Now it came out that the pictures of him in fishnet stockings were real. Remember he said they were photoshopped? Allegedly he paid the other party, some Russian again, a girl, $20 million to go away and give him back the high heels and the stockings. This is unbelievable. Courthouse sources told the New York Post that De La Hoya shelled out a whopping $20 million to Dravnell to go away. The deal also called for her to give back the heels, lingerie, and fishnets that she kept after their kinky photo session. The cross-dressing photo sent De La Hoya into a tailspin, and he thought about throwing in the towel permanently. See, that's terrific. Frolicking with Siberian knockout Milana Dravnell. So that's two in a row. You had Mel Gibson with a Russian, and now you have De La Hoya. Just shows you, huh? Just shows you what you get. That's terrific. Just shows you what you get in this world. Arizona, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You know, Dr. Savage, you were relating that story about the man who lost everything, and you asked, what do you do when you lose everything? Well,
right.
I've lost everything I worked for three times so far, and I'm only in my mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost everything because I trusted the wrong people, and they stole. You know, you have a couple choices. You can get angry. You can get vindictive, but as we both know, you leave vengeance to the Lord, right? Because he's much better at it than we are.
Yeah, whatever you do, if you turn to lawyers, they're the only ones who win.
Yeah, you never put your soul in the hands of a lawyer. Never. You know, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money. You know, when you grew up, you're a bit older than I am. But
in my case, I believe that you have to turn to lawyers at some point for some situations, but by and large, you should try to work it out yourself if you can, if you're dealing with a rational individual. So what are you doing now? Have you lost everything now, or are you living on the upswing?
Bankruptcy. My wife and I are trying to open up a business, a restaurant. It's taken me 4 years. 2 years into it, my gallbladder almost killed me. I was out of commission for 6 months, and I'm back at it. I make some money. I fix cars. I restore cars. So I make some money, I buy some more materials, and three people just climb through my roof and get $10,000 worth of damage, cut all the wiring out of my building. What am I going to do, get upset about it? No, I'm going to...
They robbed the copper wiring?
They wanted the copper wiring, so they cut all the wiring.
Oh, my, that's like a scam. That whole thing is an epidemic in America. Who is doing the copper wiring theft across America, John? Is it a certain ethnic group? Is it gangs or what?
What it is, Michael, is in this particular case, is three individuals, two guys and a gal. They've grown up, they're in their 40s, they've been on welfare their whole life. They don't know how to work.
What are they? I hear that they're doing it for crack or for meth. They're stealing copper for meth.
This is for booze, Michael, just to buy beer.
Who buys the copper? Who buys the stolen copper across the country?
The recycling.
So let the FBI investigate the recyclers instead of the Gibson Guitar Company.
Well, then the recycling.
Let Obama send them to the recycling gangsters instead of the guitar company. How's that for an answer?
Doing the Gibson is dead wrong.
Unbelievable. I'm sending you a free gift today, John, a copy of Abuse of Power. I'm sure the thriller will enlighten you and wake you up. That's all. Kansas City, Missouri. Going to Kansas City. John, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, John?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for staying after those guys in Washington. I'm really excited to read Abuse of Power. Can you share with us what you're working on now? What's your next novel going to be?
Oh, my God. Of the making of books, there is no end. Tell you what, I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. But, yes, I have another book in the works for next spring, which I'll tell you about when I come back on the Savage Nation. I never end. Never end. It looks like I'm sitting still, but I'm racing along.
Savage. Jumping with my boy, see it in the city. Jumping with my boy, see it in the city. Mr. President of the DJ committee. We're gonna be up all night getting with it. We want you to stay.
It is the Savage Nation. Jumping with Symphony Sid, written by Les the Young, with lyrics by King Pleasure. One of the greats in radio. I mean, I grew up as a kid listening to this guy. Who knew that I'd be in radio bigger than him? Who knew? But you see, the write-up about me wouldn't be as glowing. If you look up the writing about Michael Savage, they try to smear me every which way this Sunday. But Symphony Sid, they turn into a hero. All right, whatever. Who cares what they write about me? Oh, let me hear the music. Louder, louder, louder. Arrested for marijuana? For smoking a reefer? Legal in California. That's why the roads are broken. If you turn it, you know, if you actually look where medical marijuana is legal, you'll find the infrastructure is more damaged than in areas where it's not legalized. There's some inverse proportion between the legalization of marijuana and the state of the infrastructure of the state. I don't know how that works exactly, but there's something to do with it. Because marijuana is called dope for a reason. Most people who smoke it are dope. Doped up. And they can't function. They think they can function better, which is a marker they're not functioning better. And I'm going to get the dopers calling. I'm better than you. I could outrun you. Yeah, I could. Keep telling yourself that. If you're so damn smart, think of how much smarter you'd be without impairing your brain, fool. Pittsburgh, PA, Rich, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I've been looking at this issue with the Gibson guitars, and there's an article out here, an interview today with the president of Gibson Guitars, and basically the defense or the Fed said that they would make his problems go away if he used Madagascar labor instead of our labor. It really has to do with the Lacey Act and how the Fed interprets it.
Yes, but it's gangsterism on the part of the Justice Department. It's like Al Capone saying that we'll stop throwing rocks through your window if you use us for protection.
Basically, the quote is, if they use the same wood tree was finished by Indian workers, then the material would be legal, but they want it to be finished by Madagascar.
There you go. There you go. So again, it's exporting jobs instead of keeping them in America. This is I'm telling you, this case, if you were to ask me pick one case that typifies the Obama administration, it would be armed goons of the Obama Fish and Wildlife Department breaking into the Gibson guitar factory with loaded guns and threatening the workers for violating international treaties on endangered wood. This, to me, epitomizes it. This is it. This case is it. I'll remember this one forever. Here's a story for you. A man suffering from long, painful erections tried to rob father for drug money. I couldn't believe this story when I saw it this morning. When you find yourself suffering an erection that lasts more than 4 hours, you should call your doctor, not rob your father, the article says. An Upper East Side man who suffers from a condition called priapism, which causes painful erections that can last for hours, was busted for allegedly trying to steal money from his father to buy painkillers he hoped would grant him relief, according to sources. David Miller, age 30, was so hard up for drugs that he allegedly broke into his father's place in New York, pulled a knife and said, I want you out and I want money. His father stood firm, however, I don't know if that's a double entendre, calling cops and having him arrested on charges of burglary and attempted robbery. The elder Miller said his son became addicted to painkillers because of the boy's excruciating erections. The father was quoted as saying, my son has a very rare disease. He has a priapism, which means he gets an erection that lasts 5 or 6 hours and it's very painful. Tommy Miller, 57, said. They gave him oxycodone. That's his problem. He's addicted to drugs now. You talk about being caught between a rock and a hard place. I'm sorry. That's being caught between not a rock and a hard place, but between, let's say, oxycodone and a hard place. That's how this song ends. That's a crazy story. The father said he's been sick since he was a little boy. He has an enzyme deficiency. He has an enzyme deficiency? Can I get that disease? Is there any way to get that disease? He said, I had him arrested. I bailed him out. Is there any way to get that disease temporarily, Mr. Miller? Is there any way to give yourself that disease? And he said, I swear I'm not making this up. The boy has been sick since he's a little boy. He has an enzyme deficiency. I had him arrested. I bailed him out. Well, there is a disease called priapism. It's actually true. Women, nymphomaniacs, but this is not exactly the equivalent of male nymphomania per se, but I talked about priapism years ago when I did a story on, actually I interviewed a woman who wrote a book on nymphomania, which is no longer considered an illness. It's now considered the norm in colleges. In fact, they teach women not to consider sluttism misbehavior. It's considered the norm in most universities today, since the people who teach them have lost all morality altogether. So the first thing you do is give them condoms when they arrive at college and a booklet on how to have safe sex. That's their idea of a college education today. They take a nice, clean girl, and they give them condoms and a book on how to have safe sex, and they tell them to practice with their sorority sister. That's the they have no idea why they can't find a job. They didn't study anything except how to have sex. No, why they're not given a corporate job, and because they're not given a corporate job, they start screaming about capitalism being no good, and if only they lived in Denmark, they'd be employed by the state. And they go to work in a forest company exporting rosewood. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You see why I stay in the business? What would I do otherwise? I have to do this. My family is not here. They're on vacation. Everyone's having a good time. I'm having a better time because I'm focused. I get reports every day. I get pictures from the iPhone of where they are. And it's 9 hours later. I'm calling when I'm up. They're going to sleep. They're walking in Cape the Antibes, and they're telling me that the streets are clean and everything's beautiful. There's no broken roads. And I'm saying, I'm living in the third world. You're visiting Europe, and it looks like clean and perfect. Yep, they said not one broken road in France. And here in America, you cannot believe the Bay Area, the broken infrastructure. How many times have I said this to you on the Savage Nation? You know, my show emanates out of San Francisco, right, and the area around it. I have some multiple studios. So you drive on to the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco and see if I'm lying. See who's lying here. The roadway that joins the Golden Gate Bridge is full of potholes and broken. Here is an iconic structure that people travel from around the country to drive on. And the schmucks and the crooks who run San Francisco leave the road broken in order to rob the money or to give it to bums for this cause and that cause. They're robbing it. Where is the money to fix the road going to the Golden Gate Bridge? It should have been repaved 5 years ago. They tell you they don't have the money with the budget in this state. With the money they give to illegal aliens, they don't have the money to pave a road in front of the Golden Gate Bridge. They could do it in 3 hours. In the middle of the night, they could do it. This just shows you what's going on in this state and the kind of what happens when you get a Democrat Party running a state. It is 100% corrupt socialist Democrats from top to bottom. The governor, the mayor, the legislature, 100% a single-party system, and the roads are broken. You go to Malaysia, the roads are better than in San Francisco. So when you find yourself suffering from an erection that lasts more than 4 hours, you should call the governor of the state of California and see if you can get yourself a job in the Department of Homeland Security. Portland, Oregon. Kim, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have turned my 22-year-old son on to you. We listen to you. We read your books. We love you, and we're excited for your new book to come out.
Well, why do you, I don't understand, you're a stay-at-home mom, are you married?
I'm married. I've been married for 24 years.
Okay, but you want your son to listen to me, why? Because I'm such a wonderful, great model, and a role model, and a father figure, and a brother, and an uncle?
Yes, and I agree with your politics and your views.
Good, well, you should agree with my politics, because it makes common sense. I'm going to send you abuse of power. Thank you for calling. 1-800-449-8255 is my phone number. Have you gone to michaelsavage.com yet to see the story on Oscar De La Hoya? And that's a terrible story that she blackmailed him for $20 million, if it's true, just because he wore fishnets and high heels. I don't know what he's ashamed of. What's the big deal? I mean, shouldn't you judge the man by his boxing? De La Hoya wore fishnet stockings, paid other party. And don't we have sound on that? You said you got the interview. Beowulf, do we have him? Here, Daryl Hannah threatens more protests against Obama over pipeline. I thought I was reading De La Hoya instead of Daryl Hannah. Let's see the De La Hoya sound. What do we have? Well, let's hear 19.
When I was an active fighter, and obviously Victor can relate, is... you know, we don't have to prove ourselves outside the ring. Our job is inside the ring to win fights.
Right. And absolutely.
To not destroy somebody, but to to knock somebody out, I guess. And
right.
Outside the ring, you know, we've been blessed on being just, I guess, good people all around.
He's 100% right. You see, that's the exact truth. In the ring, he's supposed to be ferocious and a tiger. Outside the ring, he just has to be a decent person. That's the amazing thing. So I don't know why you're so ashamed of wearing fishnet stockings and being blackmailed by that gold-digging thing of his. That thing, I wouldn't have paid her off. I would say, go ahead, publish the picture, see if I care. Can you imagine this? The bizarrely dressed boxer frolicking with Siberian knockout Milana Dravnel, some knockout. He said, yes, let me tell you, it was me in those pictures. He told the new show, Aki Iaora, here and now, Aki Iaora. He confirmed the scandalous pictures of him in high heels, fishnet stockings, and frilly lingerie are real. So what? He wanted to walk on the soft side. Now the ex-fighter has come clean. I'm tired of lying to the public. It almost killed him. He said he was high on booze and coke when the racy photos were snapped. Isn't that something? Isn't that something that a girl would do that to a guy like this? He paid her $20 million? The cross-dressing photo sent De La Hoya into a tailspin, and he thought about throwing in the towel permanently. One of those nights when I was drunk and alone, I'm going to ask myself, is it worth it to be alive? I was already feeling like I had nothing, he said. And what is going through your mind are your children, your wife, the people who love you. You know, if I were him, God forbid that ever happened to me, go ahead, publish the picture, see if I care. I mean, well, what's the big deal? The guy's a great boxer. That's all that should have mattered. I would have told her to go to hell and go back to Moscow with the pictures. Unbelievable to me what a world we're living in. They blackmail Mel Gibson. What do you have, 2 months in the hay with her? And look what he had to pay off that one, that prize. It's awful. It's just awful, these gold diggers that come over here. Big deal, they're good looking. And inside is a vampire. A vampire is inside the good looks. What did your mother tell you? You can't judge a book by its cover, huh? Well, in many cases, you can, especially if they speak Russian. 1-800-449-8255, Tucson, Arizona. Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Michael. I just wanted to present the argument about with regard to smoking pot of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, where
yeah, right. George Washington fought the British so you could be a pothead. You're right.
No.
George Washington fought the War of Independence so that you could smoke pot and be a dope. Absolutely. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, I just moved up the Gibson guitar story to the top right of MichaelSavage.com because to me, this story smacks of gangsterism. The Obama administration's harassment of the Gibson Guitar Company, which is an American company through and through, and see these armed thugs from Fish and Game treating employees of a little guitar company like drug criminals, it typifies the gangsterism of Barack Hussein Obama. And I think this story needs much more exposure so that people finally understand the kind of criminals that are running this country. In plain English, this is the story of stories. Pam in Indiana, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, this morning I heard an interview with the CEO, Henry, on another news program this morning. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that, yes, they were raided in 2009, and then again here recently, all mm-hmm. three of his plants are shut down, pending investigation.
It sounds to me like an Al Capone-like raid on a guitar company. There's a couple of reasons they're doing it. The reason they're trying to drive the Gibson Guitar Company out of business, I remember they made guitars that were used by musicians such as B.B. King and Angus Young. Don't forget that. This is a great American company. They use wood to make great guitars. They've allied themselves with Greenpeace. They preserved forests. Now they're being destroyed by Obama. Why? There's a couple of reasons. One, because it's a misinterpretation of the authority of the Obama administration, number one. Number two, they want to unionize the plants. And number three, which is more sinister as a possibility, and this is the one that worries me, is that somebody made a donation to the Obama administration who wants to drive Gibson Guitar out of business so that they can take over the guitar business. And I would trace this directly to their competitors. And let's pray to God when we look into this, that it's not a Chinese company that bought off the Obama administration. Because it's entirely possible. It's entirely possible when you have a corrupt government that they did this to destroy Gibson Guitars so their competition could thrive. Am I wrong about that as a possibility?
It's a very possibility. And
if I were the FBI, I'd investigate the Department of Fish and Game and find out why they're doing it to Gibson Guitars. And I think every musician in this country should boycott the Obama administration. I think that any musician in this country should be concerned that the Gibson Guitar Factory in Memphis, Tennessee, is being served with search warrants by the Obama gangsters. It's unbelievable to me. Take a look at the picture. Federal agents with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service shut down the Gibson Guitar Factory in Memphis August 24th to serve search warrants. Take a look at the thugs in the picture. Take a look at the armed thugs. They're wearing combat boots. These fat slobs have 40 caliber Glocks on their hips. These punk cowards with guns. Oh, okay, I'm gonna calm down. I'm going to calm down. I hate government officials with guns who abuse their power in World War II. Here is a clear case of eco-Nazism. Here are the brown shirts, or you want to call them the green shirts, under Obama, closing down an American factory, and he's going to give a BS speech next week about jobs? Now you know why I'm not in Congress. Because if I was sitting in Congress and I listened to this guy give us his double talk about jobs, I'd get up and scream, "Tell America about your closing down the Gibson Guitar Factory, Mr. President!" That's something you'd expect from somebody in the media, wouldn't you? The next news conference, wouldn't you like someone to yell out, "Mr. President, tell us about why you closed down the Gibson Guitar Factory and destroyed jobs across America, Mr. President?" Remember years ago, there was a guy, Sam Donaldson, who was so brave, and he would call out when Ronald Reagan was president, but Reagan never let him get the best of him. Remember that? Where are the Sam Donaldsons of today? How have they become such capons? Geldings, geldings of the media. That's the little essay of the day, the geldings of the media. The geldings of the media. If they're not gelded, they don't get into the gilded halls of the press room. In order to get into the gilded halls of the Obama White House, you need to prove you've been gelded, which is related to gelt, because it's all gelt at the end of the day. Gilt, gelt, and geld. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Shauna, Maryland, welcome to the program. I got a minute and a half left. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Dr. Savage? I'd like to just let you know that I'm a first-time listener for the past 3 weeks. My boss turned me on to the show. I really like it. I like that you let us know the side of the news that we never, ever get to hear. And I would like to tell you that we respect you in my office, and we really love listening to you. We stream you live. And I'd like to know a little bit more about your book, because my boss loves your books, and we're really interested.
Well, I'm going to send you a free copy of the novel, Abuse of Power, but I'm not going to talk about it much until next week. It's my new novel. St. Martin's Press is publishing it. It's got a huge first printing of over 100,000 copies. It's going to be a major hit. You know, it's only a matter of whether or not it hits number one. I don't know. It'll be in the top five for sure. The fact of the matter is, it's going to be a big hit because it's based upon a true life story about a media figure who's smeared by a liberal billionaire and is not allowed to enter Britain. And if anybody has been listening to this show for a number of years, they know that yours truly is not allowed to enter Britain. I'm the only member of the American media banned from entering that wonderful, that ex-great nation of Britain. So stay on the line, and I'll send you a copy of Abuse of Power, and we'll talk about it more next week. 1-800-449-8255, time for one last call. Fire away, line one in Austin, Texas. Christopher, fire away, question one. What's your question?
Dr. Savage, I'm a little off topic from today's show, but I respect your insight, so I wanted to get your thoughts. When the Republicans win the White House, when they get in there, since the established Republicans really haven't opened up to the conservative Tea Party, if they don't get the job done...
What's the question? I only have 10 seconds.
If they don't get the job done and get the country back on a conservative path, do you think there's going to be a big enough rift to form a new party?
Okay, I don't know, but I would like to form the Nationalist Party myself. If I were 20 years younger, I would form a third party called the Nationalist Party, based upon borders, language, and culture, and I'd run for the presidency.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In the news today, it's football between Obama and the Republicans, and who knows? I don't even know what's going on. One night they're the ones on, they're having a debate. The next night he's on, and there's football. You think I care this far ahead? I really don't. I honestly don't. I mean, I know that you don't care either, truthfully, so I'm not going to talk about it. But what's in the news that I am going to talk about? Libya? Well, let's go to FEMA. FEMA's use of the term federal family expands. They're now not a federal government. They're a federal family. Daryl Issa says to the Department of Justice, you have basically screwed us by not giving us information on the gun running to Mexico. Yeah, right. Obama's approval among women at an all-time low. I guess the family is a family of welfare recipients who are not women. California Senate okays college aid for illegal aliens. The measure would give students access to public money. You know, California's like worse than a third world nation if the roads are looked at. It's astounding. Economy, productivity falling for the third straight quarter. Muslim Americans playing prominent roles in Al-Qaeda. They're increasingly recruited to act as lone wolves. Bring in more Muslims. That's what we need, is more Muslims in America. Because you must have diversity. Even if the country disappears, the important thing is that we won't disappear as a monolithic nation. It'll be a diverse nation that disappears. And that's good. Obama's uncle set to fight deportation. The same verminous legal team that helped his sister stay is helping the drunk driver stay. Radical leftist Berkeley prof with no judicial experience confirmed to California Supreme Court. Gibson guitar wails on Fed's raid over Wood. Employees are being treated like criminals by the vermin in the Obama administration who raided a guitar factory to make sure the wood wasn't endangered. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Lock 485. Call them now. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Obama to the media says, stop calling them Al-Qaeda. Black Muslim representative says Tea Party wants blacks hanging from a tree. Fight breaks out at New York Park over Muslim headscarves. Mel Gibson gets off easy from singer's claims. Former New York governor to host a radio show. That's right, David Pattison, former governor of New York, will precede Michael Savage on WOR. How's that for a combo? I actually always liked Governor Pattison. In fact, if you look into my history, I thought he was more moderate than most of the Republicans in New York State, by the way. Arizona says the teachers can have accents and use bad grammar. Any teacher who does not have an accent and uses correct grammar will be fired in Arizona because the federal government said that the state was discriminating against teachers who had bad accents and used bad grammar. That's interesting. Oscar De La Hoya admits to cheating, addictions, and considering suicide. Terrible. Finally, on michaelsavage.com, a man suffering from long, painful erections tried to rob his father for drug money. He was in such pain. This is a problem. He has priapism, and apparently it's incurable. And he just needs pain meds. We do not have his cell phone number to give out on the show. Journalism, terrorism, patriotism, really, just how far up the chain does the abuse of power reach? Are you curious? Read a free excerpt of my new thriller, Abuse of Power, right on michaelsavage.com. As far as the latest news goes, you've just heard it, and there's always new news. Jobless rate looms over 2012. White House's own projections put unemployment above 9% in presidential election year, painting a grim picture of the economy as Obama seeks a second White House term. U.S. to U.N., your salary hikes are inappropriate. U.S. demands U.N. roll back pay hikes. Says salaries for equivalent government civil servants are frozen. Yeah, right. U.N. peacekeepers force girls to trade sex for food. Nonprofit accused of using grant to open strip club. D.C. government says $300,000 was spent to build a strip club instead of job training facility for people with HIV/AIDS. So AIDS money from the government was used to open a strip club. Isn't that great? Oh, the world gets crazy. Let us see what else is in the news. Alaska woman punches bear in face to save dog. Okay. That's interesting. Border agents seize drugs being smuggled south. Duh. Drugs being smuggled south. Okay. What else is on the Savage Nation today? Well, you know, everything is on the Savage Nation today. We have the Sound and the Fury. Oh, the job-creating Keystone Pipeline that the job-creating pipeline that will be running from Canada to Oklahoma, Texas, will actually be good for the environment, but bad for beetles. The State Department says it will affect an endangered beetle, and therefore the pipeline must be stopped. And that's why, it's an adverse effect. The American burying beetle is an endangered species, and so the Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline must be stopped at all costs. And that's why the actresses with low derrières are excited with their liberal quotient. New survey, 7 of 10 American Muslims happy with Obama. That's fascinating. That's really good, because while most Americans view events in America unfavorably, Muslims like America. That's very interesting. Sure, they're happy. They're taking over the country. They're imposing Sharia on everybody. And if you say one word, you get arrested for a hate crime. You'd be happy, too. Michelle Obama says, women energize me. Okay, we'll let that go. West Virginia is the fattest state. Colorado is the trimmest. 50% of the U.S. could be obese by 2030. Not my problem. Is Hillary on the horizon as Obama challenger? Don't know. I mean, which do you like? The pot or the kettle? You know, you want to come out of the frying pan into the fire? Because she could probably get more of a leftist agenda through than he could, right? I mean, let's face it. She's more acceptable than him, I guess. I don't really know. Finally on the Savage Nation, more news is breaking news as we talk, and you'll have all of it as we go along right here on the Savage Nation. But look at this one. Look at this one. Dow closes down over 100 points ahead of Obama's jobs report. The U.S. stocks fell Thursday for the first time in 5 sessions, near their lowest levels of the day, as Wall Street is afraid of the jobs report coming out tomorrow. All this and more on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Washington, D.C., Magda, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. First, I wanted to thank you for speaking for our people. I'm from Kosovo, and I really wanted to thank you. I can't believe
it. Wait, I'm sorry. You're from where, Magda?
Kosovo.
Oh.
Kosovo.
Oh, boy, Savage. Boy, have you suffered under Bill Clinton?
Oh, gosh, yes. And then,
How many hundreds of Christian monasteries and churches have been burned to the ground by the Albanian Muslims? Hundreds and hundreds. Not one of them ever appeared in a news report. Go on, please.
I wanted to make the point that I think it doesn't matter how much screening you're going to have. I think this jihadist will infect themselves before actually boarding into the plane.
You mean they're going to infect themselves with a biological agent?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what screening you got.
God.
Are they going to give us a physical exam before?
Oh, my God. You mean they don't even have to get it in a can?
Exactly.
You could have somebody infected with bubonic plague getting on a plane, you mean?
Right, right. bite or a deadly virus that is airborne. And
oh, my God.
That's, you know, their strategy. That's what they're trying to do. And it doesn't really take, you know, a person with a, you know, I think it just takes a person with two neurons to figure that out.
Good God. Well, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't even think of that. That's because you and I both know that these fanatics are not thinking of the next diaper bomber. They're already on to the next skimata, right?
Yes, you're absolutely
right. And the next scheme is said to be biological agents. And I thought that they'd have to bring it on in a sort of an aerosolized can to aerosolize the biological agent. You're saying they themselves are the carrier.
To kill themselves, why not infect themselves right before boarding?
Oh,
before
God.
Going to the terminal. So I'm saying, what's next, a physical exam? So I think, well, do profiling.
So what's the solution then, Magda? What is the solution?
Profiling, the racial, but just because I know them personally. But, you know. And then I have a comment about Afghanistan. You always ask why we are in Afghanistan and Iraq and so on. I have a theory, maybe a question. I think that we need to create theaters for these people, war theaters. When we started pulling out of Iraq, we saw a lot more activity coming up. I don't think that it was because he's sending 30,000 more troops. Because, you know, we had Sassy, we had the synagogue in New York that they tried to, you know, bomb with a missile. We had the South Carolina cell. We had the Ohio cell, the Detroit, the Dallas. All of this in the last 10 months, the activity has picked up over 200%. That means that more money is pouring in for here, whereas before they will go to, you know, with Al Ansar in Iraq or, you know, in Afghanistan.
So, Magda, are you in the intelligence community yourself?
Somewhat.
Yeah, I can hear it. I hope to God you're working for the U.S. government, because you sound like one smart person.
Well, no, I think that is a lot, you know, what's going on, and also why they're not, you know, it doesn't mean that we didn't have any plots before, but it just means that we stopped them at a much earlier stage. We had Sassy with the WMD from Colorado. We had so many homegrown cells here, but we were able to stop them before. Now our defense.
No, wait. You mean under George Bush, because there was a more vigorous approach to the terrorist cells. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying in the last 10 months alone, we had so many big.
Oh, you mean that were stopped?
Mm-hmm.
So why all of a sudden is the frequency increasing?
I think because, first of all, we took many theaters out, and so more money is pouring in from Al-Qaeda, from Saudi, to, you know, for these people to do activities elsewhere. Whereas before, they would try, you know, give money to Al-Ansar, which was the, you know, resistance in Iraq.
Oh, you're saying because they're not fighting as much in Iraq, they have the money to spend here?
Exactly. And in Afghanistan. With these people, you need to create war theaters. Otherwise, they will come here. And this is what is happening. And also that the whole intel community has been, you know, with Napolitano and everybody, we have been, it's just very demoralized.
So do you believe Napolitano is fit for this job?
Oh, no, please. No, you are so right. No.
Why was she picked for this job of all the people that could have been picked? I don't care whether they're left wing, but you need somebody with security training, intelligence. Why her? Where did she come from?
It's just political. What is happening in many agencies right now is that you have all these political appointees and you have all these career professionals who are trying to do their jobs. But they are fearing the political appointees from mainly this administration and the late Bush administration that they're going to stab him in the back. So they can't do
so in other words, they're still playing politics. They're putting in these left-wing Obama appointees who stab the actual intelligence agents in the back who are doing their job.
Exactly. So they.
Oh, boy.
And they handcuff them. You know, you need a court order to do anything to, you know.
Yes. Yes. Well, I would like to make you the chief of security of the Savage Nation. You're the best caller I've had on this subject ever.
You are my favorite, my idol. You, out of anyone in the entire West, you know, and I think in the entire world, you have spoken.
Well, come on. Let's just say I'm your favorite talk show. So that'll work for me.
You are well known. You are well known within our people. You spoke so well and such truth that...
You know, I carry around a... I'm not into, like, good luck charms, but I carry one around. It is a Christian coin that the Serbians give out, the priests give out. You know the one I mean? They're round and there's a cross on it?
Yes, yes.
It was given to me by a Serbian priest after Bill Clinton mercilessly bombed Serbia for 78 straight days with U.S. bombers that were repainted with NATO markings in order to please his friends in the Europe, his European socialist friends, notably Javier Solana of Spain. I remember that incident like I'm standing here today. They destroyed your country mercilessly in order to steal Kosovo from the Serbs.
Thank you. Thank you, God, for somebody like you.
They burnt over 300 churches to the ground. Not one of those churches was ever shown by the Associated Press. Never. Never. And it was all done to steal Kosovo from Serbia, which have been part of Serbia since the 1100s. One of the greatest geographic thefts in the history of the world has gone on, and nobody knows about it.
No, nobody knows. And you're the only one that has been saying it. And I just thank you. And as a Serbian, I will thank you forever.
Now, I'd like to know more about you, so here's what I'd like to say, Magda. Stay on the line. I'm going to send you a free copy of Abuse of Power, and I'd like to initiate an email correspondence with you, if you don't mind. You can use even a fake address. It doesn't matter to me.
Savage.
The Middle East is blowing up right now, and here to talk about it is terrorism and national security expert Eric Stackelback. He just came back from Israel. He's a correspondent and terrorism analyst for CBN News. Eric Stackelback, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, always a pleasure to be here.
We'll start off in Israel, where Israel has warships in the Red Sea. What are the horrible chances of war breaking out between Islamic extremists within Egypt and the Israelis, God forbid?
Well, Michael, look, these are the bitter fruits of the Arab Spring, which I refer to as an Islamist winter because that's how it's shaping up, especially in Egypt. Look, when the Obama administration decided to throw the Mubarak government under the bus, it was clear to one and all, anyone, even a casual observer of the Middle East, that the Muslim Brotherhood and radical Islamic groups would be the biggest beneficiaries. Now, what do we see? Number one, we see something, Michael, that would have been inconceivable just a few months ago under Mubarak. We see Iran sending warships to the Red Sea. Now, for 30 years under Mubarak, Egypt and the radical regime in Tehran had no ties, no connections at all. Now, magically, once Mubarak's out the door, this new Egyptian government is embracing Iran and allowing them to set up shop in the Red Sea. This is Iran, a show of force by Iran, an attempt at intimidation by Iran, directed, obviously, towards Israel. I've reported on this many times, Michael, over the past few months, how Iran wants to establish that Red Sea port, and courtesy of this new Egyptian government, looks like they're doing it. And number two, the other bitter fruit of this Arab Spring is the collapse of the security situation in the Sinai Peninsula. Now, Egypt controls that territory. They've controlled it ever since the peace treaty with Israel about 30 years ago got underway. It's right on Israel's southern border. Now, it's been problematic, Michael, for the past several years. We've had al-Qaeda activity in Sinai. We've had assorted Islamic jihadi activity there. And another key thing, Michael, is that is populated mostly by Bedouins. Now, these Bedouins have allegiance to no one other than the almighty dollar. They will work with Islamic terror groups. So what do we have? Last week, Michael, I was in Israel. As soon as I arrived, I'm in a cab leaving Ben-Gurion Airport. I hear on the radio that there was a terrorist attack in Eilat in southern Israel, and that attack emanated, surprise, out of Sinai. Now, we have Al-Qaeda-linked groups there. We have Hamas in Gaza transiting through Sinai. And we have the Egyptian military, who was supposed to be in charge of that territory, apparently not doing enough, to say the least. So if we're going to have terror attacks directed toward Israeli civilians out of the Sinai Peninsula, it's going to be a big, big problem. That's why Israel's sending warships to the Red Sea to help monitor that area, because frankly, with this new Egyptian government, you can't trust them. And if the Muslim Brotherhood comes to power in the coming months, when we have elections in Egypt and as the political process gets underway there, the quote-unquote democracy, if the Brotherhood comes to power, all bets are off.
The UN will be voting on whether to recognize a Palestinian state. Don't you think the Israelis have given up enough? I mean, the Palestinians are given to the destruction of the Jews.
You know, look, it's interesting, Michael. When I was in Israel, I was in the biblical heartland, Judea, Samaria. This is where the Old Testament of the Bible literally took place up until the times of King David. It's called the West Bank by the international community. The brave Jews, about 300,000 of them who live there, are referred to as illegal settlers, occupiers, particularly by this administration under President Obama. But I spent some time out there, Michael, and I have to say, if Israel gives up this land, number one, it's a security disaster. Israel is the size of New Jersey. If they give up Judea, Samaria, quote-unquote West Bank, it will be the size of Delaware. That's how much Israel would shrink. There's a biblical, a religious connection between the Jewish people and these territories, but the security, Michael, would be out the window. You would have literally Hamas. Right now, look, Hamas is firing rockets haphazardly from Gaza. If they were able to set up shop in the West Bank, those rockets would literally be on top of Israeli communities, Jewish communities, and they would have a clear shot from those mountain ranges in Judea and Samaria to clearly target Jewish communities. Unlike the situation in Gaza, where a lot of times the rockets are fired blindly, still deadly, don't get me wrong, and killing women and children, Israeli women and children every day, in Judea, Samaria, if Israel was to give up those territories, it's a mountainous, hilly terrain, Michael. Hamas, other jihadi groups could literally roll those rockets right on the hills and look down, have a clear view at Israeli communities. It's a very dangerous thing. The interesting thing to me is, what is the Obama administration going to do this month at the UN? They say they're going to veto it, this push for a unilateral declaration of a Palestinian state. No matter what Israel thinks, no matter what Israel wants, the world is going to demand a Palestinian state. Obama administration says they're going to veto it, but I'll be interested, Michael, to see how vocal Obama and his minions are in opposition to this UN declaration against Israel, because this is the most anti-Israel American president we've ever seen.
We cannot have you on the Savage Nation without discussing what's going on in Libya. Was this the right thing to do, or should we have just stayed out of it?
Michael, I consider this Libya intervention one of the greatest blunders. It's going to go down as one of the greatest blunders in American foreign policy history, at least for the new century and the past 100 years. And I'm grouping that in also with our throwing under the bus of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, which will also go down as a colossal all-time foreign policy blunder. In Libya, the quote-unquote rebels, I call them the Libyan Mujahideen, or holy warriors, these rebels are littered with Al-Qaeda sympathizers and literally legitimate Al-Qaeda members, guys who fought against U.S. troops, killed U.S. troops in Iraq, are now among the leadership of these Libyan rebels, the Libyan opposition. So I think what we're doing here is we have laid the groundwork, just like we did in Egypt, by pushing out Gaddafi, a horrible guy, a terrible guy, a terrorist, a murderer, going straight to hell, don't get me wrong, but coming after him. Do we now have the possibility of an Islamic state in Libya? As horrible as Gaddafi was, we had him isolated. We had him under wraps. We had him groveling to the West, wanting to get back in our good graces. Now do you have the possibility of an Islamic state? There's no coincidence. It's not a coincidence that Iran admitted this week, Iranian government officials admitted this week that, yes, we have been funding the Libyan opposition. Now, why would Iran do that? obviously, because Iran wants to prop up radical Islamic forces in Libya and across the Middle East. Iran wants to unite the Shia and Sunni worlds to take on Israel, take on the West. And if you have an Islamic State in Libya, that's a great step towards that direction. Look, we know the leadership among this opposition in Libya, as I said, is riddled with Islamic jihadists. It's going to be very interesting now to see what the Obama administration and NATO do in Libya and with this Frankenstein's monster that they've created.
7 out of 10 Americans are worried about another terrorist attack under Obama. What would you do to prevent such an attack?
Well, Michael, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of 9/11. Thank God we haven't seen anything on a colossal scale like we saw on that day. But my take, and I talk about this in my book, The Terrorist Next Door, my view on what we need to worry about now. Of course, we need to worry about another 9/11, and I can assure you, Al-Qaeda and those associated groups are working diligently every day to pull off another 9/11. But in the meantime, and Michael, you and I have discussed this, Al-Qaeda has shifted tactics to something I call the chip away strategy. What is that? Think of Fort Hood. Think of the Christmas Day underwear bomber, the Times Square bomber last year, lone wolves, self-starters, low-tech, inexpensive. This is the new blueprint. This could bleed us economically, bleed us psychologically. It doesn't take a genius to walk into a shopping mall, yell Allahu Akbar, and open fire. This is the new blueprint. As Al-Qaeda is planning to pull off the big one, in the meantime, their leadership has come to the conclusion that, hey, these small-scale attacks, if they're carried out with great frequency, the picture of Fort Hood every week, this could be a very effective strategy because it would chip away at our psyche, at our economy. There'd be government disarray. How would we deal with it? Think of the Israeli threat level. Shopping malls, buses, trains, schools. Are we really ready for that in America? I don't think so. And Al-Qaeda knows that we're not ready for it.
Eric Stackelback, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, great being here as always. You can check out my show, Stackelback on Terror, on cbnnews.com. And also look for my book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. Thanks again.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Put more jobs at risk in an industry that's already been one of the hardest hit over the last decade. It's inexcusable to cut off necessary investments at a time when so many of our highways are choked with congestion, when so many of our bridges are in need of repair, when so many commuters depend on reliable public transit, and when travel and shipping delays cost businesses billions of dollars every single year. At a time when a lot of people in Washington are talking about creating jobs, it's time to stop the political gamesmanship that can actually cost us hundreds of thousands of jobs.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. Okay, moving on.
The younger generation can do multiple things at a time, but all wrong. They're able to multitask, but they do everything wrong. They can't write a letter correctly. They can't type correctly. Nothing. I never saw anything like it. People do everything wrong. No matter what you ask people to do today, they can't get anything right, particularly if they're under 50. They can't work. They don't want to work right. I was raised in a time when the work ethic was king. I mean, you had to work. You had to work, and you had to do a good job. It was an honor. It was a mark of a person's self-respect, dignity, manhood, to be a worker and a good one. That's how I was raised. It was drummed into me from early childhood. And then you wake up and you see children, they won't clean a boat, they won't clean a house. I mean, pay them. You can't find an American kid, a white kid, to do any kind of work. They won't clean a boat, they won't clean a house, they won't babysit, they won't walk a dog. They're a bunch of spoiled drug addicts. An entire generation of children raised to think that the world owes them a living, and they walk around with a snotty attitude that I don't know where it comes from. You know, I got to be harsh about this. I watch, you know, I largely live in the suburbs. I stay in the city part-time, and I move around through many locations for obvious reasons. But a lot of my time is spent in the safe white suburbs, so to speak. I mean, let's call it like what it is. No matter how liberal they say they are, they don't want anyone around them who doesn't look like them, even though they vote lib. That's the way they are. And you watch them in their child raising, and sometimes you have to shake your head, whether it be a young mother who probably is on a prescription drug herself, and all she's obsessed with is her abs, feeding her child a jelly donut and a cocoa in the morning on her way to school, along with his Ritalin tablet, knowing nothing about diet and a child's behavior, nothing. And she doesn't want to know about it. All she wants to know is to get the brat into school so she can go have the affair or go to the exercise class for 4 hours. Whether it is a pair of white parents who are a little older than I was when I had my first child, taking a brat to a restaurant, 8, 8:30, 9, I shake my head. When do they stay home with them? When do they stay home? Don't they do homework? Isn't there a safe time to go to a restaurant where you don't have to listen to? And the crayons. Fine dining around a kid with a crayon or a coloring book? I can't even digest when they pull out the Crayolas. Why are they in the restaurant with the child with Crayolas educating them? And they always do it to show how smart they are and the child is. Last night I went to a place. It was downscale Italian. I figured I could escape it, but no, it got worse. There was a father at an adjacent table. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I had to take the food home. I had to leave. Now, he wasn't a bad guy, don't get me wrong, but I had to listen to an entire lesson. As the children are eating, he says to them, during the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 1960s, who was president? I'm not making this up. And the children have to repeat to the father, who was the attorney on the U.S. Supreme Court? And I'm trying to eat. I couldn't even get a piece of bread down my gullet. So as I said, I packed it up and left. What is this lesson at a dinner? Why do I have to hear it to understand you're a smart, liberal man and you're intelligent and your children are as bright as you and they're going to learn to screw everyone around them when they grow up like you do for a living with your law degree? That's what you're telling me? That they're not going to be like the ordinary person, they're going to learn how to screw everybody just like daddy? Why do I have to hear this? Is there no hour when there are no children? Now, look, I love children. I raise children. But at a certain point, it seems to me it's child abuse to have them in a restaurant. So I say to myself, don't they do homework anymore? I know they don't babysit. I know they don't wash a car or a boat for a buck. They don't do chores. Do they do homework? No, unless the homework is how to put a condom on a cucumber or how to learn how racist white people are. Or to learn that marijuana is healthy for you and tobacco. I mean, tobacco is bad for you. Marijuana is healthy for you. So is there no time of day? When I raised my children, if we went into a restaurant and the kids started to make any kind of noise, I immediately picked them up and I went out of the restaurant. I talked to them. I said, look, there were other people. And even if they didn't understand me, I said to them, you can't make noise in the restaurant. There are other people eating and they want to have a nice dinner. So please, if we go back, you can't make noise. You can't make one of your famous cocktails out of the salt and the pepper and the ketchup and the mustard and the soy sauce and mix it and pass it around. No, you can't make that famous cocktail that you two like to pass around with each other because I'm liable to puke on the table. That's in the Chinese restaurants. They used to make a cocktail. Do you have any idea that that's the reason the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer? It was because of times like this. When you have a situation like we have today, that's why the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer. You know how the story goes, don't you? Well, I may as well tell. It's as interesting as any, having studied this for years, all of this stuff. Our theories, no one knows. I mean, the ancient Sumerians look like my uncles to me. I mean, I see the pictures, renderings of them. I guess I descend from Sumerians because they all look like my relatives. But the way the story goes is, somebody ate some grain, some type of wheat dish or whatever in the area there, the Mediterranean basin, and they spat it out. I know it's disgusting. They didn't eat it all. I was like, ugh, this is disgusting. Again, another night of grain? I'm sick of grain. I don't care how healthy they are. I don't want it. I'm going to puke. And they spit it in the plate, but they were starving. Days later, they went back, and there was nothing to eat but the grain that they half masticated and discarded in the plate. And the guy ate it. Ugh, disgusting. I ate this guy. And guess what? His wife didn't look like she had a mustache for the first time in 25 years. His ugly little children looked like he could deal with them without wanting to throw them out of the cave door. In other words, he got drunk. Why? Because the half-masticated grain matter that he spat up fermented in the cave during that period that it was sitting there, and it was produced some alcohol. And that's apparently one of the theories as to how alcoholic beverages, better known as adult beverages, developed in history. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm glad I could share this moment with you. Another moment in Savage history on the Savage Nation. It's actually probably, according to what I've read, true. And by the way, guess which culture? You're not going to believe this one. This is a real, you're talking about historical ironies. Take a guess which ancient peoples first developed wine from the grape. Buzz, answer. The same country that's now dominated by the invader from Turkey, Iran. In other words, the ancient Persians, allegedly, or it is thought historically, were the first viticulturalists on the planet. Now, take a look now. You got an invader from Turkey named Ahmadinejad, who was apparently, according to Iranians I know, is not even of Iranian descent. He's an invader. He's like a Hun. I mean, excuse me, like a barbarian invader. And he is the most anti-alcohol, anti-freedom guy in the history of Persia since King Haman. You hear this?
Savage.